Our fourth technical presentation today is using dynamic elemental modeling for AFCs and drums. Our presenter is Mr. Daniel Sharp, who is a longwall mining engineer at Komatsu Mining. Daniel is a product manager for the AFC group at Komatsu, based in the Worcester site in the UK. He graduated with a BS in geology from the University of Leeds in 2013 before completing an MS in mining engineering from Camborne School of Mines the following year. Starting as an intern at Komatsu, he progressed to take a position within the new product development department, working to produce a system for assessing the effects of underground mining conditions on the performance of the AFC. Following a stint working for the sales team, Daniel took up the position of project manager in early 2019. So, with that being said, we'll welcome Daniel up for our fourth and final presentation in this session.
All right, good. Thank you very much, everyone, for coming out this morning. It was a good introduction, actually. My background is in geology and mining engineering, so this won't be as mechanical as we've seen so far today. But I've been at Komatsu for about 5 years approximately now. And really what I was brought in to look at was the mine environment side of things, so looking at the implications of the cut product on wear, on flow and corrosion. And it's really looking at the flow side of things that I'm going to talk about today. So at Komatsu, we run a simulation package that allows us to look in detail about what we might see in terms of conditions underground in terms of flow. So the discrete element method is the numerical process behind the simulations. But what it really does is it allows us to get some physical properties from a cut product from a customer. We can replicate that in terms of the simulations here. And as you can see, what we do is we regenerate those particles. We put them on a geometry or the armored face conveyor, and we simulate what we would see underground. It's a fairly new process. It's something that's really been around probably only at my time at Komatsu. But it's really born out of, I guess, the stuff that the belt conveyor team was doing. It's quite a lot easier to simulate belt flow calculations because the belt themselves is a fixed moving plane, so you can calculate the troughing angles a bit more easily. And that allows you a bit more of a stable platform to look at surcharge angles and the angle of repose of the material. When you start considering an AFC, there's more moving parts in terms of the flight bars and the chain. And obviously, if you've got the third party of the face or the block there as well, it makes it a little bit more complicated. So largely, we've relied on operational experience in the past and intuition from guys who have been doing this for many, many years. But the stage we're at now is really looking at combining that operational experience and that understanding with this more proactive simulation technique. So really, we're at the stage where we're saying, this is what we know, this is what we can see underground, how can we apply that to the simulation package and start to replicate the actual conditions that we'd see underground. So in terms of where we actually apply it, obviously the armored face conveyor is effectively one long bulk material handling piece of equipment. So we start at the tailgate and we can simulate the run of face fairly easily. However, the bits that we're interested in is where you might necessarily see bottlenecks or issues along the conveyor. So we've started really with the main gate corner. As you can imagine, you're sending thousands of tons of material an hour down this thing. And then you hit a corner there and you're trying to turn it through 90 degrees. So it's obviously going to be an issue in that corner there. That's something that we've looked at in quite a lot of detail. And then out by from there, we've looked at the crusher more recently. That's again where we push from being an open system into an enclosed envelope. And then we shove a massive rotor in the way as well. So it's naturally going to be a bit of a bottleneck there. And then combining that historical side of things with the belt conveyor simulations and calculations, we've looked at the BSL discharge. So we've looked at the point where the material actually discharges onto the belt. And the software really started, it has its origins in hopper design and rail car loading and that kind of thing. So it was natural to have it evolve into the discharge onto the belt there as well. It's worth noting that we have looked at the shearer. We've certainly done a couple of fairly basic simulations looking at the way that the shearer drums and the cowls load onto the AFC. But for reasons that I'll touch on a bit later on, it's an incredibly complicated thing to start to try and simulate when you look at particles breaking up and all that kind of stuff. So at the moment, that's really a dotted line saying that it's something that we're working on. But really, Our goal with this kind of thing is to say, if you have material being cut, you have material being loaded onto the AFC, we can simulate everything from that loading right through into the discharge on the belt, and then the simulations of the belt are already there. So the whole point of this is that we're trying to create a fully dynamic system where we've got you covered right from the tailgate right through to the plant. And that's really where the goal is lying as we go forward with this. In terms of the actual process, this almost acts as a little bit of a disclaimer slide. One of the most important things is making sure that you start these simulations out right. We can take a physical product from a customer, we can take a product from the face, and then what we do is, in order to replicate those particles in the software, we have to calibrate that material. So we take a number of physical properties you can see there with the restitution and the angle of repose. We actually do a physical calibration drop test on the right-hand side there on that image. And the goal of this is that we get a number of physical properties that we then replicate in the software. That doesn't necessarily mean that what we do is we take those physical bits of data and simply put them in and make it work. It's a bit of a complicated and fairly touchy-feely little process whereby the particles in the software don't necessarily have the same properties as they would in reality. So we can do this test, and what our goal is to replicate the angles that we see in this test. So that test rig is effectively two separated boxes. We pull the top box apart, and it passes 200 kilograms of material through that bottom, and that gives us the shear angle on the top and the angle of repose on the bottom. And then if I just overlay this here, what we do is we simulate that physical test in the software, and we try and replicate the angles that we see. So we'll start off with the density that we've measured, and we'll start off with the properties, but it's really now it's about altering those to make sure that the material behaves like it should. So it's not a physical property of the material we're looking for, it's the physical behavior of the material that we're trying to simulate. So that'll become a bit more apparent later on in terms of why that's important. And then just on the bottom there, you can see the bottom of the simulation. If I just run those backwards and forwards, it's not exactly correct on this one, but you can see what we're trying to do in terms of replicating the angles there. So once we have a calibrated material, next is what we actually can use this software for. So we've touched on where we use it, but in terms of what we use it for, it's an incredibly useful design validation tool. It gives us a fairly quick, most of the smaller simulations we can do in a couple of days, some of the bigger ones are up to a week. But it allows us a fairly quick understanding of whether any of these design changes are going to have implications in terms of the way material passes through the system. So it's a useful design validation tool. I'll skip through that middle one and go down to the product development because they kind of link into that middle one. But in a similar note, because we can do these simulations fairly quickly, product development is really where the home of the simulations lie, because it allows us to test a number of different design ideas without ever actually committing to anything being a physical product. That allows us to test out the box ideas a bit more than we necessarily would normally do, and it allows our design engineers to go a little bit further down that design process before they fully commit to actually putting something into steel. And both those, that top and that bottom point there, kind of lead into the middle thing, where using this simulation software can actually allow us to problem solve. So if we see a customer wanting to up their production, for example, we can take this simulation and we can alter the production in the simulation and say, how are we going to see, or what impacts are we going to see by doing that? And then if we see that this capacity is not increased, for example, or we see an issue, we can use that design validation at the top and the product development at the bottom and try and solve that problem. And that's really where we're trying to get to, is that proactive understanding of how we can improve the performance of the AFC. I'll move on to a little bit more detail of where we actually use the software now. We touched on it at the start, and this one is this topic here is the main gate corner. We've simulated a couple of different things, one of them being the bulk flow around that corner. So by bulk flow, I mean that's at full capacity, running the particles through the system and transferring it around the corner. The design engineers looked at flight bar pitch, whether it was a 4 or 6 link pitch. They looked at the lump breaker design. And the one that I'll show here is the veranda. We took two different designs of the veranda highlighted in that blue circle there. And we wanted to see whether the implications of the different designs had sort of a reaction in terms of the way that the material transferred through that system. So the veranda itself is there to kind of limit the amount of material passing through the letterbox and around that main gate sprocket, so it has implications for carryback. But obviously we wanted to understand whether that had implications for that flow around the corner. So if I just overlay the first simulation there on the left-hand side, the red particles, so these particles can be colored by their velocity, by their speed. So the red particles there are the ones that are moving more rapidly around that corner. So in that area over the top of the veranda there, you can see the little red patch. And then if I overlay on the right-hand side there, you can see that the density of the red particles moving there is actually increased. That's, you know, fairly intuitive if we go back. The sort of veranda on the left-hand side there has got a big notch in it, so you'd imagine that that would be a bit more of an obstacle for flow. And that's exactly what we saw when we go through this. So it allows us a fairly easy validation tool. This is where that design validation came in, is it said, if we make this change, what are we likely to see when this stuff goes underground? And that's really where the beauty of this sort of lies. Sticking with the main gate corner, but on a slightly more smaller scale approach. So we have those bulk flow simulations. Then we looked at something on a smaller scale, which is the pepper pot design. The pepper pot, again, has implications for carryback. It allows material to pass through the bottom race of the AFC onto the bottom race of the BSL and wrap around the sprocket and go out by, rather than sending it back up the AFC face towards the tailgate. So it's got implications for wear and for power consumption. But the simulation, the way that we can do the analytics, we can slice through it and take a really narrowed in view, as you can see here, in terms of the actual sort of more specific sections of the equipment. And what we can do is in the analytics, we can put a net underneath the letterbox here, the pepper pot, sorry, and we can actually physically measure the mass of material that's passing through that system. So we can say during the simulation period, how efficient is that pepper pot at pushing material through those holes? And we can measure them side by side and give us a fairly quick comparison of the two. I touched on the home of these simulations really starting with belts. So we did look at the discharge onto the belt. And the work that we did here was we did upwards of a dozen simulations looking at the extreme articulations of the BSL in terms of the way that they'd operate underground. So our design engineer who was working on this wanted to say, if we articulate it to the most extreme ways possible, are we going to see spillage on the belt? So if the BSL is discharging at an obtuse angle, is that going to have implications for material passing off the belt and spilling onto the floor? So we did a number of simulations, just baseline simulations to determine that. We did that net underneath again to measure a mass of material passing off that system and spilling off the belt. And then what the design engineer did is he looked at the louver plate design on the BSL, and he subtly adjusted the louver plate design just to narrow the cold flow in a bit more into the center of the conveyor. And in pretty much every simulation, even on the first design change, there was a significant reduction in the material passing off the belt. So again, it just shows you how it gives us, without even putting anything to steel, we can validate that the design is probably going to have a positive impact in terms of the belt performance or the discharge performance. It's worth noting at this stage that the data that we're getting is very much a relative thing. It's not, because of the way that we calibrate the material and the physical properties of the material are not necessarily the same as what you'd see underground, the data is very much comparative. So we will take one simulation and compare it to another and say we've seen a reduction, yes or no, in that. So as it is at the moment, we can't say that a design change will be 100% efficient. We can't say that you'll see X number of kilograms less spilling off your belt. But what we can say is that the design change that we've made is most likely going to have an impact in terms of X, Y, Z, or whatever it is that you're looking at. So that's kind of where we are at the moment. And the reason is because of the things that I touched on before. The particle size distribution, because of the computational power that we have to limit the size distribution of the particles. So as you can see in the bottom image there, you're going to see bigger and smaller lumps than that underground, but we can't simulate that as it is at the moment because of the more particles that you put in the system, the longer these simulations take. So it's sort of a trade-off between accuracy and efficiency in terms of the system, the simulation calculations. And then density and shape as well. We're confident that the particles that we've got, no matter what the properties are in the software, because we did the extensive calibration, we're confident that they behave like they should. But obviously, if your density is different underground than it is in this simulation, you can't accurately say that the mass of material is going to be the same. And then worth noting just at the bottom there, the geometries here, so belt conveyors, again, is where it started, because when you've got your troughing angle and your bottom of your belt, you just animate that plane. So when a particle impacts it, it receives a signal saying that it should be transported at a certain speed. With flight bars and chain, it's a little bit more difficult because our guys actually have to create a spreadsheet that tells them where they need to travel. So we tell a flight bar that it's going to travel at a certain velocity for a certain period of time, and then it's going to change its dynamic and wrap around the sprocket, for example. But there's no feedback from the particles on the position of that flight bar. So whereas underground you'd see if you get fully loaded chain, it might stretch or the flight bars might move subtly, that's not the case here. They remain on a fixed dynamic just because it's not possible to give that feedback from the particles yet in terms of the way that the software works. So what we say is that the simulations are kind of a semi-quantitative technique, so we can do that comparison. We can say you've seen X percent reduction from simulation to simulation, but it's not something that we can turn around and say you're going to see X number of kilograms or whatever it might be at the moment. So that's kind of where we are in terms of using this as a quantitative data solution, I guess. Where we've used it in new product development is, this is a fairly emerging thing. We've developed our usage of the software and we've simulated those bulk flow scenarios, but now we're starting to look at it as a proactive design tool. We're confident enough that our engineers are producing simulations that replicate the conditions well enough that we can start using this more proactively. That's at the bottom there just shows side-by-side crusher simulations changing the rotor heights. That's not necessarily the development side of things, but when we actually move on to looking at the crusher envelope in a bit more detail, one of our first goals is to look at the uneven distribution of particles onto the VSL. So when we get material flowing around the main gate corner, we quite often see a favorable loading towards the block side, and that obviously has implications in terms of crusher rotor wear and hammer wear, and also the maximum sort of throughput that you can get through a system. If you've got uneven loading on one side, then that's going to create a bottleneck. So what we've been looking at, or what the development guys have been looking at in Worcester, is whether we can utilize any of the existing things that we have in that crusher envelope to level out that pile height. And that's focused on the chain curtain. That's where we've narrowed it down to being something that we could possibly look at leveling out that pile in by of the crusher. So we're pretty early stages at this. I've not put actually any of the new designs up here just for IP purposes. This is our existing chain conveyor. And you can see there that it's not, I mean, its primary purpose is not to level out the pile height. And the simulation is showing that it's doing exactly that. It's not doing anything in terms of leveling the pile height out. But some of the design changes that we've made to that area and to the curtain itself, we've actually already seen have a positive impact in terms of leveling that material out. So that's obviously just a bit of an idea of where we're going with it. And just as a side note, we actually looked at a fairly new technique in the simulations with this as well. This project's allowed us to address the issue of those geometries not being able to be dynamic with the particles. So what we can do in the software is we can create a hollow geometry, we can fill it with particles, and then we can bond them together with a predetermined strength. And then they almost act like particles within the simulation. So, for example, you can see the chain curtain is moving on the right-hand side there, or you can see it's adjusting. We've actually created that chain curtain out of particles. We've replicated the density of steel with them. And then that's the first time we've actually looked at having some sort of reactive geometry in there. So new product development is really a really good home for this kind of technique, because it just allows us to properly understand how we can develop this process and where we can take it in the future. This, I've just thought this was worth mentioning because it's quite a cool little application in terms of the validation technique we use with it. So we had a request recently for a job that the seam inclination, we were specified that it was from 0 degrees, so it was from completely flat, to 23 degrees inclination at the gate end. So we got told that, you know, we might see operational conditions like you would see on your standard longwall, but at certain points during that operation, they're going to see quite significant inclinations on the seam. So our engineers designed a pivoting drive frame. So that drive frame arrangement there is on a pivot, and it can just, as you can see there, it can articulate, basically be completely flexible to that inclination on the seam. But they turned around to our guys who did this DEM simulations and they said, can you just run this through? Just run this through the simulation software and just see whether we're going to, you know, whether we'd expect to see any difficulties in terms of when we sort of articulate this at its extremes. So the top one is 0 degrees there. That's the completely flat plane. And as you can see, the particle velocity in blue is slowing down. But importantly, what we don't see there is material rolling back. So we didn't see any bottleneck, or we didn't see any material transfer back towards the face. So that we know that our dry frame arrangement there is still going to efficiently transfer material onto the BSL. And then when you look at the bottom and you take that one, that's the 23-degree incline there. You can see that the velocity is far more even across the face. But our concern here was that when you've got that even velocity discharging, are the spill plates on the BSL going to catch the material, or are we going to overload it in any sort of situation? But again, you can see that the loading on the BSL there is pretty efficient. There doesn't look to be any issue with the material transferring and spilling over. So again, that just shows just how this can give us a quick understanding of the operational conditions underground without ever actually committing to these designs further down the process. In terms of where we're going with this, the software is fairly new. We're, as far as we're aware, Komatsu are one of the first people to apply this to longwall systems. So it's still very much a learning process. We're developing our usage of it. The software's actually developed with us as well. But there are a number of exciting things that obviously we will hope to be applying a bit more down the line. And one of them is simulating wear. So the particles in the system, we can track their position and we can track their contacts as well. So we can create heat maps of where particle contacts the geometries. So we can say on an AFC, we can track the number of contacts that the particle will have at a certain point and say we're likely to see that that's going to be a high wear location, for example. And that allows us a really useful tool to map wear along the AFC. The limitations with this at the moment is it is purely a contact. It doesn't measure contact strength or the amount of, I guess, the type of wear that you're going to see. It doesn't sort of look at grinding or impact or anything like that. It purely is a contact-based algorithm. So there's work to be done on that. But obviously, again, as we push down the line and the software develops, that has huge implications for what we'd see in terms of where we can sort of start to limit and distribute wear across the system more evenly. We can look at the residence time as well. So we can say that a particle's been in a system for X amount of time. We can look at increasing the efficiency of that. So that would have implications on throughput capacity and stuff like that. That's something that we can do now. It's not something we've looked too much at because we want to make sure that the particles that we're simulating are as accurate as they can possibly be. But that obviously would have, you know, fairly important implications in terms of system capacity and system efficiency as well. I'll just skip this one because it's probably one of the most important points, and I'll move on to that bottom one. At the moment, what we do is we calibrate a bulk material. So we ask for 200 kilograms of material from the belt, effectively, and we calibrate that. So it's a mix of everything that you're cutting in the seam. It's not, you know, purely coal or whatever it might be. It's not a purely stone. But what we'd look at doing in the future is calibrating separate materials. So then we can start to understand if you're coming up to a band that you know is going to have the roof coming in, for example, and you know that you're going to be conveying more rock, or you know that you're coming to a particularly good part of the seam and it's a really high bend, we can actually replicate that in the software and then start to consider whether that has implications. We know that if you have big blocks of stone coming in, for example, that might create a bottleneck at the main gate. What we hope is that in the future we'll be able to simulate that and start to find solutions to those problems. I'll go back to the particle breakage now, because that's really sort of the holy grail of where we're going with this. Is just like I mentioned, you can bond particles into geometry. You can bond particles and then you can break them. So you can create large blocks of material that when they see a certain load, they will break up. So obviously that then has implications for simulating the shearer. We could possibly run a shearer through a big block of bonded material and determine how it cuts and loads and everything like that. But the real difficulty with that is, again, this calibration. It's going back to that point at the start about we need to make sure that the calibration is correct. So at the moment, we take predetermined or pre-designed particles and we calibrate those. As soon as you start bonding them, that calibration then becomes invalid. So those particles that are bonded together don't behave in the simulation like they should do if you were seeing the individual particles themselves. Similarly, you could create those bonded particles, you could calibrate those, but as soon as that material is then broken up, those particles that are then broken up don't behave like they should have done at the start as well. So at the moment, we're struggling with the software's capability to accurately convey or accurately simulate bonded particles that are breaking, and then the difference in the way that those behave in the system. So it's getting there. The software company that we use have been working on this quite significantly because of our request to have this as a new tool. And we believe that we will get there to the point where material can be cut, and that's obviously will allow us a far more accurate representation of what we'd see underground. And it also opens a whole new host of areas that we can look at in terms of the equipment. But like I said, it really is a fairly early stage thing. We're working on it with this company, and say when we get to the point where we can simulate that, it should be a really impressive piece of software. So just to summarize, the discrete element method is a particle simulation technique. It's something that we replicate the conditions underground on our AFC components. We use custom material. We put design straight from CAD into the system as well, so it's always a bespoke piece of equipment. It's custom calibrated coal as well, so we're trying as accurately as we possibly can to replicate a specific customer's system. The simulations themselves are becoming increasingly reliable. We're pretty confident that we're seeing accurate enough results doing what we're doing at the moment to allow us to make design changes, and we've seen positive implications for that in terms of underground performance as well. But like I just touched on before, this is a very new technology. It's something that's sort of developing as we develop with it. So I'm sure if I stood here in 4, 6, 8 years time, that the pictures that I'd put on the screen will show bonded particles. They'll show just how much we progressed with this. So it's a case of watch this space and say hopefully it becomes a more and more useful tool as we go down the line. Thank you very much for listening. If you've got any questions, I'll be milling about the show all week as well. So just pop down to the stand. But otherwise, if you've got any now, just fire away.